Earth Boys Are Easy. Written by Susie Carter. Read by Silvercat 1620. Summary. The helicopter ride was long. Bruce had known it would be, but he could admit, if only to himself, that there was a difference between objective awareness of the flight time Arctic Cargo had estimated for the trip to the military installation and the subjective experience of being stuck back here, matching Lois Lane Lear for uncompromising stare, instead of flying the damn thing himself. Notes. For Bronson's, Aeon Entwined. You mentioned wanting Bruce and Clark discovering each other before Black Zero, Clark having fun, not quite human attributes, and Bruce being turned on about it, Broddinson's, and somehow that turned into a Fix-It AU where Bruce gets himself on that helicopter in Man of Steel and learns Clark is an alien in a wildly non-canonical way. Please forgive me for being so late with this, and I hope you enjoy it. Heart. Title, because if you can reference Earth Girls Are Easy, 1988, you should. The mildly dubious consent tag is for Bruce making bad decisions to get back at Clark for a perceived betrayal. This is a Fix-It, but this is also Steal the Bruce who decided to brand people to make lesson sticks, so he's got some issues to work out. Joe is what Clark is canonically calling himself while he's working in the Arctic at this point in canon, and Colonel Hardy's lines, and the satellite imagery technobabble, and Lois and the Injunction are all canon from Man of Steel also. I am hand-waving the timeline slightly. There's no suggestion that it takes more than a single day for Lois to notice Clark's tunnel and get skewered by a drone laser. Oh, Lois. But it's also not concretely stated that it definitely is all the same day either. The helicopter ride was long. Bruce had known it would be, but he could admit, if only to himself, that there was a difference between objective awareness of the flight time Arctic Cargo had estimated for the trip to the military installation and the subjective experience of being stuck back here, matching Lois Lane Lear for uncompromising stare instead of flying the damn thing himself. He'd have been able to cut the time by a third. Bruce Wayne had a pilot's license, almost expired, solely for the sake of boasting that he liked to take models for joyrides. What he did not have was an excuse for asking the pilot employed by Arctic Cargo to get out of that seat and let him drive. Lane was still giving him a sharp, disapproving look. The society pages weren't her usual beat, but that didn't mean she hadn't heard all there was to hear about Bruce Wayne, and Bruce resignedly made the effort to live down to her expectations. Unobserved, he could have at least used the time for something productive. Observed, he had no choice but to slouch in his seat and offer Lane a rotating menu of excessive winks, idle once-overs, and what Bruce Wayne ostensibly considered attractive bedroom eyes. Which probably wasn't the only thing she was unhappy about, though it certainly wasn't helping. He knew enough about her career to guess that she was the sort of person who thrived on riding the edge, being first, closest, right in the middle of the action, whenever the action happened to be. And in this particular case, she'd done the work, fought the military injunction that would have held her off and won, made the effort to secure the right to be here. All that, and she had to put up with Bruce Wayne hitching a ride on a whim because he had the money and the connections to pull it off for the hell of it? It was no surprise she was looking at him like, once the helicopter landed, she hoped she had a chance to pause and scrape him off her shoe. But he couldn't have afforded to let this helicopter get into the air without him. And next to that, all other considerations were inevitably secondary. He almost hadn't noticed it at all. The systems in the cave leached data from thousands of sources, anywhere Bruce had managed to chip himself a back door into. Sometimes it was easy. Various arms of Wayne Enterprises had designed, built, and even launched satellites, whether for in-house WE ventures of various kinds or in collaboration with third parties. Bruce always left himself an opening somewhere when he had the chance. NASA had been a little tougher. But they did employ contractors, and sometimes on-site contractors. Wayne Aeronautics tended to land a respectable percentage of bids to provide labor, equipment, or expertise. There weren't enough hours in the day for him to track it all himself. He had systems, automatic collation and analysis. He allowed his attention to be drawn only by what mattered most. He didn't know what it was about one minor alert that had led him to poke back through the data it had come from, archived transmissions from the past week, and the shape he'd seen in the raw images. It could have been anything. Ice layers, their crystalline internal structures, caught echoes, made electro and echographically reflective equipment unreliable. But he'd run comparisons, extrapolations, simulations, and he hadn't been able to convince himself that's all it was. Checking the location only to discover a military installation in construction had clinched it. The earliest image in his archives, the first attempted scan of that region of ice by the ER satellite, accounting for enough time for military industrial complex to rumble into motion. There was no better explanation for the sudden flurry of activity, the camp that had taken shape, and the excavation that was evidently in the beginning stages. He'd collected more data. Attempted simulated reconstructions of size and shape trimmed the possibilities down to the optimal confidence interval he could achieve. And if that thing in the ice was what he thought it was, he needed to find out. And he needed to figure out what the hell he was going to do about it. As the helicopter came down, part of the installation was visible, barely, just beyond a rise. There were a few huddled figures waiting for them, shoulders hunched against the blast of air from the chopper blades. Arctic Cargo employees or military? Bruce couldn't tell. The helicopter touched down and the doors rumbled open. The figures closed in. One of them got a tap on the shoulder, a gesture whose meaning was clear, and hurried closer. Lane was the first out, undoubtedly deeply grateful to escape an enclosed space that had Bruce Wayne in it, and the man who'd been directed to approach the doors helped her get out, lifting her by the waist to save her the trouble of clambering down in cold weather gear. And in cold weather gear, it couldn't possibly qualify as a come-on, which was doubly clear once Lane was out of range and the man's gaze moved without hesitation to Bruce. His eyes were very blue. If he recognized who he was looking at, it didn't show on his face. He lifted his hands, held them open at approximately the width of a torso, and raised his eyebrows just a little, a wry, unspoken assertion that if Bruce's masculinity demanded he turn down the help, he could, and in that case the man could just as easily stand back and let him tumble down onto his face. Unfortunately for him, Bruce Wayne had always been an equal opportunity in his taste. Bruce tilted his head. His view of the man's body was cut off at the midline by the floor of the chopper, and consisted, in any case, of thick coveralls and multiple jackets. Not the kind of view most people could make hay out of. He had to pack three or four times the sense of sleazy intent into half the once-over. It wasn't a challenge. The man had moved Lane's weight easily, without any suggestion of effort involved, and Bruce had a fairly precise imagination. By the time Bruce was done, the man's mouth had pressed itself into a flat, sour line. But he didn't move away from the chopper, and he didn't lower his hands. Generous, even where it was undeserved. Good Samaritan, or maybe just conscious of a boss or supervisor over his shoulder, and the fact that Bruce was potentially petty enough to make some kind of complaint. Bruce relented and crossed the chopper, squinting out into the blinding Arctic vista as though unprepared for it. Cold weather gear. The man's hands were vague, blunt pressure against his waist, nothing more. But Bruce's breath caught in his throat anyway. The man moved him as easily as he'd moved Lane, smooth, unhesitating strength exerted without difficulty or effort. With his feet on the ground, Bruce could make an assessment. Boots complicated accuracy, but he was almost certainly the taller, and by multiple inches. It was an idiotic thing to be struck by. Almost as idiotic as blue eyes of all the ridiculous cliches. "Joe!" someone called. The man ducked his head, half a nod, and then let go and turned away. He was directed to collect their bags. Lane warned him that hers were heavy, full of photojournalistic equipment. Bruce restrained unneeded commentary by the skin of his teeth and ignored a certain sensation of persistent heat in his face. The wind would strip it from him momentarily. His own bags would be next. He'd known this would happen, and Bruce Wayne would never object. Would, in fact, be significantly more likely to balk if asked to deal with his luggage himself. Joe would have no way of knowing what was in them, and no interest even if he did. Odds were he had no idea what was trapped in the ice beneath them, and wouldn't recognize a simulated enhancement of its shape if he had every single one of Bruce's files spread out in front of him. Bruce turned away without a backward glance and went to join Lane, who looked precisely as pleased to be joined by him as he'd expected. The Arctic cargo rep who'd showed up to meet them led them over to the rise in the, over the rise to the installation. Colonel Hardy and Dr. Hamilton were instantly recognizable from the surveillance imagery Bruce had pored over, the DARPA staff database to which he wasn't supposed to have access. They were obviously braced to try to give Lane a rundown that would satisfy her without risking their careers or the Official Secrets Act. Bruce didn't particularly enjoy the prospect of spectating. "You're early," Hardy said flatly. "We weren't expecting you until tomorrow." "Just your lucky day, I guess," Bruce told him with a smile, clapping him on the shoulder. Hardy ignored Lane's hands when she offered to shake, but he relaxed a little at the good old boy's gesture like that, which was a lot more his speed than trying to figure out what to say and how to say it and how to get a nosy civilian out of his face. Well, he was about to have one hell of a day with Lane. "Listen, I'll be honest, I couldn't give half a shit what you guys are up to. That's Lane's problem. General Stanwyck knew my dad, and he thought I could use a little fresh air, and this is going to make a badass story to tell next time I've got an interview. Not to mention the feature on page 29 last week gave you good reason to get out of Gotham for a few days," Lane murmured, caustic. Bruce aimed a slanting smile at her. "Liable, I swear. I didn't have to pay her for it." Lane's stare was withering, but it was enough to allow him to extract himself with minimal additional difficulty. Ice and rock rose in a jagged partial circle around the actual military encampment. He assessed the layout and made an educated guess as to which units probably held the bunks that had been set up for him and Lane. The doors of each were slightly open. Joe had probably only just been in and out of both, depositing their bags. Bruce recognized Lane's luggage in one and passed it off in favor of the other, which did contain his bags. And Joe. For an instant, for all that the Arctic air had managed to do, Bruce was swept away by a wave of shimmering heat. He wasn't expecting it, and he wasn't braced for it. If he'd decided Joe might genuinely be amenable, he certainly might have tried to orchestrate a dalliance with him in another day or two, for the sake of Bruce Wayne's reputation. But that wasn't anything he hadn't done 100 times, a duty that had long since begun to feel wearying, farcical. And yet he saw Joe standing in what was intended to become his own quarters, and for an instant he believed he knew why, and every single thought left his head at once. Which became excruciating the moment he actually understood what he was seeing. Joe's head came up. He turned on his heel, eyes wide and startled, and there were papers in his hands. Printouts. Folios. Bruce knew at a glance what they were, and that impossible magnesium flare of heat gave way to ice in his gut. "Wayne," Joe said, and then stopped, throat working. So he had known who he was looking at in that chopper after all, Bruce thought. Which actually made this significantly more complicated. It was absolutely essential that Bruce understand what had happened here, who Joe was, whether he had known to look for those images among Bruce's bags, whether someone had told him to, or whether he'd simply decided to look through Bruce Wayne's luggage for anything small and valuable to steal, and had encountered nothing but incomprehensible computer renderings or shapes that made no sense to him. And yet Bruce Wayne was hardly the intimidating choice of face to wear when you needed to extract answers as quickly as possible. "Harmless," he decided distantly. "Start harmless." He could always escalate if he deemed it necessary. "Well," he said aloud and narrowed his eyes. "By the look on your face, I take it Colonel Hardy didn't authorize having my bags searched." Joe swallowed. "No," he blurted, which was reassuring, both that he would commit the error of admitting it and that the admission gave Bruce something to use against him. Joe presumably wanted to keep his job, and whether he worked for Arctic Cargo or Hardy, nobody would be happy to hear that he'd been caught rifling through Bruce's belongings on his own initiative. "No, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have been..." Improbably, his face began to flush, as if he were genuinely ashamed, and then he said, startling whiplash, "People don't usually manage to sneak up on me." Bruce raised his eyebrows. "You do this that often?" "What? No, that's not what I meant." And did you find anything interesting?" Bruce paired this with another sultry look, which was allowed to seem calculated, a deliberate call-out, even if it inevitably came with the implication that Bruce Wayne thought Joe might have found his custom dildo collection in there. Joe turned redder for a moment, staring at Bruce like a deer in the headlights, but then his gaze dropped back to the sheets in his hands, the rest of the files where they were spread out across the bunk he was standing next to. and there was something in his voice that Bruce hadn't expected, something uncertain and almost reverent when he said, "It's a ship. The thing in the ice. It's a ship." He looked at Bruce again, and his eyes were intent, searching, crossing Bruce's face one way and the other. "They couldn't figure it out. They still can't. But you did." Bruce bit down on a curse and didn't let his expression deviate from Bruce Wayne's lukewarm, unimpressed blandness. Joe knew what he was looking at after all, which meant he had something on Bruce in return, even if he couldn't be aware of precisely what it was. He had to be able to guess that Bruce Wayne shouldn't have pictures like these, and he definitely shouldn't have them before Colonel Hardy had them. But Joe didn't seem like he was about to ask for $1 million to keep his mouth shut. He just seemed stunned, fascinated, hopelessly curious. He was staring at Bruce like Bruce had the answer to the only question that had ever mattered to him, and Bruce had no idea why. "They're saying the ice around it is 20,000 years old," Joe ventured after a moment, hushed. "That it can't be anything humans built." "They're right," Bruce said, and shrugged one shoulder, as if this were something Bruce Wayne had Googled on a whim during the chopper ride. 20,000 years ago, we could dress ourselves, we were getting pretty good at pottery, and we just about worked out harpoons. He tilted his chin toward the paper clutched in Joe's hands. "That's definitely a ship, and whoever made it, they're definitely not from Earth." Only as much as Joe had just said in describing the military's rumored working hypothesis. But Joe stared at Bruce, open mouthed, as though Bruce had just struck him. He looked simultaneously enraptured and terrified, which Bruce supposed was a fair enough reaction to what was potentially the first physical evidence of advanced extraterrestrial life that anyone had ever found. But there was something in the sheer intensity of it, the broken open quality to Joe's face, that caught at him anyway. "Joe," he said without quite having meant to, and he took a step forward. Joe drew a sharp breath and looked away, back down at the papers as if to hide. He cleared his throat, a painfully transparent attempt to cover for the way his voice had cracked. "You really think so?" Bruce managed, barely, to recover his own equilibrium. "Looks that way," he said almost as breezily as Bruce Wayne ought to have said it. "I should," Joe said, halting. "I should go." Bruce gave him a speculative look. It was both the right and wrong place in the script for it, and he couldn't pinpoint what was so jarring about the disconnect, but he had no better options to hand. "Not on my account," he murmured, and Joe tensed in place, eyes wide, as if that somehow was the first time that he noticed Bruce Wayne was hitting on him. "I should," Joe said again. I ought to... He swallowed hard, once, twice, and then seemed to realize he was still holding the pictures. He set them down on the bunk with the rest of Bruce's files, quick, like they'd caught fire. "I won't tell anyone," he added, rushed, already moving for the door of the unit. Bruce had only taken a couple of steps through it. Joe had to pass him to reach it, and for an instant he was right there, bulky, layered jacket in dark curls and stubbled, almost a beard, those goddamn blue eyes, close enough to touch. And then in another breath, he was gone. For the next 3 days, they circled each other. Joe was skittish at first. He looked downright hunted whenever he caught Bruce's eyes on him, hunching down into his coveralls and his jackets like he thought he could hide in them. But he caught Bruce's eyes on him because he was watching Bruce. No matter what he was supposed to be doing, he always managed to do it somewhere within Bruce's line of sight, impossible to avoid and impossible to ignore. Or at least, Bruce was utterly incapable of it. He didn't talk to Joe about the images again. He didn't talk to Joe about the ship. He probably could have gotten away with not talking to Joe at all. He told himself that considering Joe knew every reason he'd given Hardy for being here was a lie, it only made sense to keep tabs on him, make sure he'd been sincere in saying that he wasn't going to tell anyone about it. He told himself that considering Bruce Wayne's checkered history, the way he'd already acted towards Joe in front of more than one person, hitting on Joe at every possible opportunity was simply the most logical option. But if that had been all it was, then he wouldn't have been enjoying it so much. The effect it had on Joe was half the fun of it, maybe three quarters. He always looked surprised at first, as if he somehow had no idea what he looked like. Maybe he'd been raised in the Arctic, and the military had found him in the snow and put him to work carrying bags. Maybe he'd never owned a mirror, or seen water. Then he'd start to get red. Red, a little snippy. He never actually told Bruce to fuck off. He just made it crisply clear exactly how ridiculous he thought Bruce was being, firmly, but utterly without venom. The worst part, the part that really had its hooks into Bruce, was that all of that melted off of him like frost if Bruce actually touched him. Anywhere, anywhere at all. They were both still bundled up in half a dozen layers apiece. There wasn't anything meaningfully sexual about Bruce's palm flattened against his chest, Bruce's hand on his shoulder, Bruce's knee against his when they were seated at the same table in the frigid mess hall. But whenever it happened, Joe got quiet. Joe got quiet and his eyes got even bluer, and he shot Bruce shy, strange glances, throat working, as if he were tempted and frightened at the same time. He never touched Bruce first. But he never shoved Bruce's hands off him, and he never moved away. Which was objectively unfortunate, because Bruce couldn't stop doing it, and it obviously wasn't scaring him away, and Bruce needed him scared away as decisively as possible. Joe had almost caught him half a dozen times already, releasing the specialized ice drilling drones he was sending down one at a time to surround the ship. He still hadn't identified a good location for a tunnel of a size that would allow him to approach the ship in person, but in the interim, readings, scans, and exterior scraping samples would still yield potentially significant dividends. All told, it felt like the kind of mess that was inevitably coming to a head. The way Joe couldn't seem to leave him alone, the way he couldn't leave Joe alone either. Their overlapping secrets, though of course Bruce's were more significant by far in comparison to what would come across as merely a one-time attempt at petty larceny. The tension of their mutual awareness of everything they couldn't say to each other when anyone else was in earshot, how relentlessly persistent and present every single thing about Joe was, from his rough, quiet voice to the unmistakable strength of him, the way his throat moved when he was uncertain, and the way those blue fucking eyes followed Bruce. And then on the fourth day, Bruce discovered the tunnel. It was, frustratingly, a matter of chance. Perhaps not chance alone. He'd been looking for a spot that might work, somewhere accessible but functionally hidden from both the military installation and the camp below it. But then he happened to decide he'd pick his way along the rocks in that direction this time, the flip of a mental coin, nothing more. He was thinking that the thickness of the ice sheet here was promising, that perhaps it would prove stable enough to support a tunnel he could fit through. It was dim early evening, because that was the time of day at which he'd be least visible to anyone who happened to glance up the curving face of the ice and rock, and at which his absences were also least noticeable. Before the evening meal was served, too early for the curfew the military had asserted it had the right to impose on its guests to apply. It was dim, but not dark, and ahead of him he caught a strange reflection, one that shouldn't have been there. Coming to him from the wrong angle, the shape in which the light had cast itself too regular for untamed ice. He frowned and pushed further. A curve, he understood. A curve. A hole, neatly bored into the ice sheet, and it was easily half again as tall as he was. He had to perform a frankly idiotic maneuver, edging his way across a narrow, uneven shelf of ice to actually reach it. But then he had, and it was... His eyes hadn't deceived him. It was a tunnel, significantly more ambitious than anything he'd have attempted himself, and it led directly toward the ship. He tried to force himself to think it through. His own drones hadn't done this. Someone else's? Or... 20,000 years made it vanishingly unlikely, but not necessarily impossible. Perhaps the ship wasn't alone down there. Perhaps someone had been waiting 20,000 years for the same glacial shift that had allowed the ship to be detected, for the opportunity to find a way out. He swallowed and took a step, and in the space of a blink, with no warning except a sudden sweeping motion of air, Joe was in front of him. "Don't," Joe said. It sounded sharp, but his eyes were wide, not in order despite the word he'd picked, a plea. Too late, Bruce thought distantly. He felt a little cold and very steady. He'd been an idiot, obviously. There was something going on here, something he had missed entirely. Something he had missed entirely, and for the unforgivably idiotic reason that he had, somehow, started to trust Joe. Whatever it was Joe was involved in, whether it was a rival scientific team or another nation's military, Joe had been concealing it, and Bruce had had no clue. Joe was a plant, a con job. Joe was the absolute least competent honeypot Bruce had ever encountered, and Bruce had been utterly snared. Evidently, Bruce didn't need to bother holding back when it came to manipulating Joe. It would, if anything, merely serve to make them even. He tilted his head and looked Joe up and down, as if thoughtfully. He allowed his mouth to stretch into something not unlike a smile. Oh? And why shouldn't I? Please, Joe said, hoarse. He looked grave, strained, frightened. But then, of course, he did. Bruce had found him out. Depending on who he really was, what he'd done, he could be prosecuted for anything from identity forgery to treason. Bruce looked past him and then at him. I don't know. Looks pretty interesting. Wayne, Bruce, please, it's dangerous. Bruce had no doubt that it was. Whether they'd found an alien alive down there, or he only needed to worry about a dozen spies with machine guns. He took a step forward. Joe had his hands spread across his chest, over his coat, asking him to stay where he was, not just verbally, but physically. Bruce moved into the pressure of it, and Joe didn't increase that pressure, let him lean so close they were abruptly breathing each other's air. "Worried about me?" Bruce murmured, tone snide. "How sweet." Joe looked confused, uncertain. "Bruce," he said. "I don't know," Bruce went on evenly. "I think I'd like to go down this tunnel. I think I'd like to find out where it ends." Joe went pale. "So," Bruce spelled out, "if you don't want me to do that, then I guess you'd better make me a better offer." It was cruel, horribly cruel. He knew that even as he was doing it, even as he pressed his hand into the seam of Joe's thick, ugly coveralls and followed it down between Joe's thighs. It was just that, in that moment, it felt only fair. It felt as though Joe had been equally terribly cruel to him, drawing him in with such mortifying ease and then ruining it all with such merciless swiftness. It felt like the least Bruce could do to him in return. Joe flinched, jerked away, and reached down to close his hand around Bruce's wrist, but not with half the strength Bruce knew he was hiding under those coveralls, those layered jackets. That was practically permission, wasn't it? Joe hadn't even tried to hit him yet. "Bruce, come on," Bruce bit out, vicious, and then he was yanking at Joe's clothes, tugging a zipper down with a sharp sound that almost drowned out Joe's indrawn breath, pushing his fingers past layers, taut, elastic waistbands. "Bruce, hold on, wait, Joe said frantically, and then Bruce touched his cock, and the world rearranged itself in an instant. Bruce felt himself go very still. Joe was still clutching at his wrist, and Joe's eyes were wet, and for a second Joe was staring at him with the most agonized expression Bruce had ever seen on his face. And then slowly, deliberately, Bruce moved his fingertips against the surface that was beneath them, and Joe gasped and shook, and his eyes fell helplessly shut. The coveralls, Bruce thought dimly. The layers. They'd covered it, disguised the shape. Or maybe it wasn't actually that different overall. Maybe Joe's cock looked essentially the way it ought to, as long as it was covered with something. But it felt like... He didn't even know how to parse it, how to visualize what he was touching. Layers, he thought, and almost snorted. Ridges. No, edges. Edges. Slim curves of flesh like petals, and they flared in tiers, each extending from beneath one or two of its predecessors, up the entire shape of Joe's cock, from large, thick arcs at the root to tiny, delicate ripples at the head. Bruce made the comparison through comprehensive tactile evaluation. Joe made a choked, frantic noise in the back of his throat and shuddered into the pressure of Bruce's hand on him. Bruce wondered vaguely whether upward strokes were more pleasing, more comfortable for him. But no, he seemed to have an equally strong and equally positive, if undeniably distinct, reaction to the way a downstroke ruffled the petals of his cock backwards, against their natural orientation. Bruce tried it again to confirm his impressions, to lend weight to the working hypothesis. Again, again, and Christ, Joe was practically sobbing, squirming, hands squeezing Bruce's wrist rhythmically. "Bruce," he gasped out. "Bruce!" He came. Or at least Bruce had no other way to contextualize the sudden rush of fluid. He came, and it was... It spilled from between every petal of him, the entire length of his cock, so that Bruce had the impression of literally wringing it from him, an undeniably gratifying sensation. Bruce went on until the flow had stopped, perhaps 20 seconds, he thought. His hand was wet, a little sticky. Joe's frantic breaths began to slow. He'd screwed his eyes shut, faltering, weak-kneed. Bruce became increasingly sure he was keeping them shut slowly in order to give himself time to figure out what the hell to do next. Bruce could save him the trouble. "So it is an alien ship," he said without preamble. "And I take it you're the alien." Joe bit his lip, clearly a fortifying gesture, and then opened his eyes. He was flushed, overwhelmed and wary at the same time. "Alien," Bruce reminded himself firmly. "Secret alien. But Christ, he was beautiful." "Yeah," he said unsteadily, and then cleared his throat. "I mean, I'm an alien. I didn't come in the ship." Bruce frowned.
"You didn't?"
"No. No, I was a baby. I was sent here when I was a baby." Joe swallowed. "I don't know why, or... I don't know anything." He hesitated, eyeing Bruce cautiously. "You're taking this really well." Bruce looked at him, a relative assessment considering how Bruce had begun this, considering that Bruce's wet hand was still shoved inside Joe's clothes, tangled there loosely, knuckles brushing Joe's softly relaxing, stacked-petaled cock. There were options. A joke. Not the weirdest thing Bruce Wayne had ever been told, had ever seen while jerking someone off. Evasion. Joe clearly anticipated being questioned further, being asked to explain himself, and it wouldn't be difficult to press that angle, to make him feel guilty for concealing himself and desperate to make up for the magnitude of the deception. But Bruce couldn't convince himself it was appropriate. He'd assaulted Joe. Even if Joe had chosen to let him do it, on the strength of a furious driving desire to be even, to return what he'd perceived as a betrayal in kind. Joe had given him the truth instead. Joe had known what his hand would find, and had allowed him to find it. Had, perhaps, been intending to warn him first. "Bruce, hold on, wait, wait!" The least Bruce owed him was a glimpse in return. So he met Joe's eyes and pulled his hand out of Joe's clothes, wiped it off on his own double-layered insulated pants, and then zipped Joe carefully back up. He didn't misdirect, didn't reshape his face into a smile or a leer or an assessing stare. He looked at Joe quietly, seriously, and then he said, "As it happens, I have a few secrets of my own." Joe saw and heard the difference. The perception, his understanding of it, crossed his face visibly. God, he was easy to read. How had he ever managed to lie to everyone around him for so long? Enough. At least for now. Bruce let him see the mask going up, the same way he'd let it see it fall. Then he slanted his mouth to one side and added, "None of them are my cock, though. That's 100% all-natural human baseline." Joe gave him an incredulous look and went red. Bruce took mercy on him. "And you drilled this tunnel?"
"Yeah," Joe said and then bit his lip. "Sort of. And it goes all the way to the ship."
"Almost," Joe admitted.
"Show me," Bruce said. Joe hesitated. "It really is dangerous. The ship has these security drones."
"Can they hurt you?"
Joe shifted his weight.
"Not really."
Bruce thought about that rush of air, the way Joe must have moved to be nowhere and then in front of him, that quickly. the way Joe had lifted him out of the chopper and at the same time always handled him so carefully. "Then I think we'll be fine," he said aloud. "Joe, show me." And Joe swallowed and took his hand and said, "Okay, and my name isn't Joe. It's Clark." "Clark," Bruce repeated, and let Joe, Clark, lead him into the ice. The end. Notes. Yes, that was a pinecone ginger dick on Clark. You're welcome.